My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Can you imagine buying what was supposed to be the exact same product, any product, and having it be different every time? And in some cases, the product that you purchased was outright faulty. It wasn't fit for purpose. This is not an acceptable scenario in any category of consumer goods, but it's exactly what was happening in the Australian wine industry 20-odd years ago. And through no fault of our winemakers. The culprit was dodgy corks, which were causing widespread issues with TCA, commonly known as cork taint, as well as sporadic oxidation and even leaking. The inconsistency was a nightmare, not just for consumers, but everyone involved in the wine trade. By the late 90s, a group of Clare Valley winemakers had had enough. They joined forces, packaging their Rieslings from the 2000 vintage under screw cap, and set about educating the trade and consumers about the benefits of using this closure. And in this special episode of Drinks Adventures, made possible by the support of Taylor's Wines, you're going to hear how it all happened and what was the wider significance of the initiative, which drove widespread adoption of screw cap across Australia and beyond. Founded in 1969, Taylor's was one of the 14 Clare Valley wineries that drove the screwcap initiative from the very beginning. Look out for the new vintages of Taylor's St Andrews collection with the upcoming family flagship release in July 2023.
When the group of us got together to talk about changing to screw cap, it just seemed like a no-brainer, really, and a relief in a way as well.
You've sort of got to look at it and say it's one of the biggest technological advances in winemaking, really, in the world.
It's a global phenomenon that started to change the way the wine world consumed wine.
The reason it was such an amazing success is that we ran it as winemakers.
The clarity that remains in those older wines, thanks to the closure, is a great endorsement of what that group did 20-odd years ago.
The Clare Valley is located 130 kilometres north of Adelaide in South Australia. It's a very small region in the context of Australian wine, responsible for less than 1% of production. But it has a big reputation, most notably for Riesling, which is the lead variety for many of the region's top producers. Riesling, of course, is an aromatic white variety that shows up TCA and oxidation issues more readily. And that meant that Clare was particularly exposed when the Australian wine industry was grappling with the issue of substandard corks in the 1990s. Andrew Oxhardy was a winemaker at Napstein at the time and president of the Clare Valley Winemakers Association.
Gewürztraminer and a Riesling were the two sort of aromatic whites that we made at Napstein, and we were obviously under cork, and the amount of cork taint we were getting was more than 10%. It was just depressing to see how much we were getting. You know, if you lined up a dozen, you might have one that was, or two that was absolutely TCA, you know, really badly affected, and then might have five or six that were in various states of random ox or just not right. So we were presenting wine that we'd spent all that time on making, and we were presenting it in a package that wasn't actually technically sound.
So I'm Stephanie Toole. I'm the owner and winemaker of Mount Horrox Wines in the Clare Valley. It wasn't just the question of the TCA. There was always the sulphur gets sculpt. So you get a flattening of the wine, completely flattening, and you don't get TCA as such, you know, that wet wool character. It's just the wine's quite off, hasn't got any life. And if you opened, you know, three or four bottles of the same wine, you'd get a different wine each time.
My view is that cork has been around for a few hundred years and it's always been flawed. I think until quite recently, it was the best option for sealing wine bottles, but it always had the risk of tainting the wine, either because the cork carried a taint chemical in it or because the cork was too permeable and allowed the wine to develop too quickly. So we always thought we're doing everything else the very best we possibly can. And we got to the bottling stage and thought the weak point in all of this is sealing it with a cork.
Grosset Wines founder Geoffrey Grosset speaking there. This is wine writer Nick Ryan.
There's no doubt that the cork companies were not giving Australia and, well, maybe the new world in general the respect that, you know, they probably deserved. We certainly weren't getting the best corks, despite some saying that's what they were paying for. Pretty much the understanding was no patch of rejected corks ever went back over the equator. There'd be a lot of stuff coming through that had probably been opened up and tested and potentially rejected somewhere else, and they would just try and flog it on to the next person. And eventually it would go through to someone who, you know, a smaller producer who didn't have the time or resources to do the testing that some of the other places did. They never went back to Portugal. They just kept moving them around and them around until someone finally accepted them.
One of the big companies, they very rigorously tested their cork batches and they marked the bags, and when the bags came back, they came back in a different form. They were being resold, having been rejected. And I think the wine world was exploding, so the production was going up dramatically. So I think the cork suppliers just got caught with having to expand their production too much. We saw corks being treated in filthy old water in Portugal with chlorine, which is a precursor to TCA. So, you know, we knew what was going on.
The cork producers actually said, we think there's a problem in Australia. And we asked them, why is that? And they said, because we get the most complaints from Australian winemakers. And that meant that we were very analytical. We really did follow the structures. We were really looking at the science behind making these beloved wines. And we could see, you know, the dissolved oxygen levels within wine from the cork seal was really random all the time.
Mitchell Taylor is Managing Director of Taylor's Wines.
I'll always remember as a young boy being in the family business, we used to have these ullages where we'd have to go around to all our customers. They would have issues with the cork, they'd say it'd be TCA. So we used to have to collect them and bring them back. Because we'd already paid tax on these bottles, we had to bring back the empties, prove they were ullage, replace them with another bottle, but also have them collected and credited through the taxation system. So it was a real logistical nightmare.
Aside from the logistical challenges, Taylor's, the Clare Valley's largest producer, had massive legal headaches to contend with as it pursued an insurance claim relating to faulty closures.
We had very large volumes of our estate wines, both white and red, that were all under significant issues with TCA. They were also leaking. We had to protect the brand, so we couldn't sort of tell people, oh, we've got this issue, because then people would be unsure and they wouldn't know. So we had to sign a secret deed at the time, have a big product recall, bring them all back, take the corks out, and then try to get the wines back onto the market. So it really was very expensive. And then the insurance companies, they wanted a lot of proof about the level of TCA. We had to do a lot of testing with the Australian Wine Research Institute, and it took many years actually to settle this.
The Clare Valley winemakers felt they had little choice but to switch to Screwcap, which other wineries acting alone had tried and failed to do in the past.
You know, wine is like sailing. You have to get everything right to know what right really is. Hardy's Old Castle Riesling is a case in point.
Having grown up in the industry, I knew that Hardy's had done it in the 70s and Yolumba had done it in the 70s with Screwcap, which all failed, weren't accepted. I did tell a story at the tasting in Clare when Hardy's bottled Old Castle at the time, which was one of the two biggest selling reasons in the country, selling wines in the country back in the late 60s, early 70s. I remember Dad coming home. Dad was a director and also an owner, but production manager. He came home and they'd actually had to put corks into the screw cap bottles and then put the screw cap on because the consumers just wouldn't accept it back then. They hated the fact that they were opening wine that didn't have a cork in. So Hardy's actually put a cork in and then put the screw cap on of Old Castle. Bizarre. But, you know, Yolumba Cart d'Or was a huge seller back then, and they went screw cap. They were one of the earliest adopters, and it really knocked them around big time. It was terrible. The acceptance back then was, you know, zero.
because it was one individual producer doing it at the time, and they had a really cheap looking small shiny Stelvin top only on the top of the bottle and not the long collar that people associate with wine, with the proper branding on the screw cap. When we could see the branding and the regionality you could also have on these screw caps, I think that initiative of doing it together in unity from an entire region, it really made everyone, you know, have a look. Where the previous attempts, while they were terrific pioneering efforts, I think there were just difficulties in getting that message out and educating. So when there's a group of an entire region doing it, you've got many people, many voices.
Yeah, look, I was working at Five Way Cellars in Sydney. Got a phone call one day. It was Jeffrey Grossett. You know, he said, look, I'm just ringing a few of our good supporters in the trade to see if you think there'd be any resistance to us moving to screw cap. And I just said, if it's your wine, Jeffrey, we could probably sell it in goat bladders. That's the crucial part of this whole story, is the fact that there was just this quality stamp on everything to begin with. It made it a much stronger proposition, I think, that, you know, everyone was mostly united on it. That sort of really helped push it over the line.
There were four key people: Stephanie Toole from Mount Horrocks, Andrew Hardy, then at Napstein's, and Andrew Mitchell. We thought the biggest issue is getting over the potential prejudice by telling people why we're doing it. And I think in my case, my customers listened to all that, and I think sometimes they thought, well, look, I'm not really sure what that's all about, but if Jeff thinks it's fine, I'm okay with that.
A few people were still quite nervous. I remember we were one of the wineries that went 100% behind screw cap because we had to build a reasonable volume to make the project a commercial success on the quantities. So a few of them went 50-50 on the cork and the screw cap.
When we did the first bottling, it was 14 producers. So, you know, to get 14 producers together was relatively easy. Back then, the industry is a bit smaller, and I think it's just that we all talked all the time, and we were all members of the Winemakers Association, and we all chatted about what was going on, and we're all on the same page about what was wrong with corks. I think we had to guarantee 500,000 bottles. And I said, well, the whole valley doesn't make 500,000 bottles of Riesling, so we needed tailors to come on. They bottled everything in screw cap from the first vintage. Treasury was Southcourt back then. They came in. Jeffrey Grossett, Mitchell and I sort of drove it, and without Jeffrey's input, especially on the technical side, his intellect allowed us to do it because he did a lot of the background science, which was invaluable. So, yeah, we needed the big guys and we needed the prestigious brands to be on board.
2000 was the first vintage bottled under screw cap by 14 participating wineries. By 2002, considered an outstanding vintage for Clare Riesling, almost every winery in the region had embraced the closure, emboldened by a positive reception from both trade and consumers.
We didn't have any budget anyway. We decided that as a group, we would ourselves go out and talk to people or get on the phone and speak to, you know, opinion leaders and other winemakers and say, this is why we're doing it and this is what these new international standard screw caps do.
What was the beautiful thing was we really did get great support from the journalists, the sommeliers. You know, we thought maybe some of them might think, oh, gee, this new seal, it's not as good as the past. But actually they embraced the innovation and they could see that it was driven by not trying to make it a cheaper seal or anything like that. It was driven by protecting the integrity, the quality of our Rieslings, and also helping us explore the exciting development that can happen when you age these bottles under Stelvin.
2002, a lot of companies still only bottled half or a third under screw cap, and they had trouble selling the one with cork. So it actually changed that quickly that, you know, all of a sudden, if you were buying Riesling, you knew you had to be in screw cap.
People were happily buying the screw capped bottles. And actually, if then, you know, they went to go back and buy it and the retailer had sold out of the screw cap stock, they weren't buying the same wine under cork. They were actually moving on to another screw capped wine. So, you know, I think that was a pretty emphatic thumbs up for the closure.
in that first year, I took all the wines that were bottled under screw cap, so there were 13 or 14 of them, I took them to London along with bottles of the same wines that had also been bottled under cork, and presented all those wines blind to a very influential group in the UK called the Circle of Wine Writers. And these were the who's who of wine writers and wine influencers. I think it was really a turning point in the UK, certainly internationally. Even in that very first early year, you could see that there was a difference in the Rieslings that were bottled under cork and those under screw cap from the same producer.
The Clare Valley Wine and Grape Association recently hosted a series of tastings of Rieslings packaged under screw cap from the 2002 and 2012 vintages, alongside new releases from 2022. Hosted by Nick Ryan, the events left no doubt that the decision to transition to screw cap was the correct one.
I remember looking at a lot of those wines at a tasting 10 years earlier when they were 10-year-olds. There was a lot of discussion around the table, very vigorous discussion around the table about whether there was something wrong with them because they weren't aging as you would sort of expect them to. They were all sort of seen to be on pause and stuck in a moment. But 10 years further down the track and they've all developed and have separated a whole lot more. Some still look incredibly youthful. You could still see the particular regional origins of the wines. Matt Paulette's wines looked strikingly like Polish Hill. They couldn't have come, they were just so emphatically Polish Hill wines, and you could see that all the way through them. So, you know, that sort of site specificity was still really evident in the older wines, and I thought that was really important.
Looking at that 20-year-old Clare Riesling that we'd made all those years ago, it had the beautiful developed secondary Riesling characteristics. There was just a bit of toast with it, but it was developing how you want. Even though it was 20 years old, it still had some beautiful fruit characteristics, a lot of honey, very softness. So I was really excited.
So I've been making wine across it for 42 years, and I basically, you could draw a line down at the date of 2000. So if we open any wine from 24 plus years ago, we'd have to open at least two because they vary. Whereas since then, you can open any vintage and you'll get a consistent result. Our 2000 vintage is from a warm year and it's drinking beautifully now. 01, I think similarly, 02 is surprisingly fresh because it was a cooler year. So in a way, it's probably still a year or two off its peak.
Today, 98% of Australian wine is bottled under screw cap. You can trace the revolution back to Clare Valley in the early 2000s.
Keep in mind, no one had a share or an interest in a screw cap company or anything. What we were focused on was the wine.
It's a shame you didn't, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, imagine that, you know, 600-700 million caps a year for the last 20 years. You need a calculator to work that one out, but it's a big number.
The bottles and caps commissioned by the Clare winemakers were respectively made by French companies Saverglass and Pechenet, with the project coordinated by Australian company Classic Packaging.
The French just basically said, well, if you want to do this, pay us lots of money, we'll do whatever you want. So they benefited wildly. So, I mean, a semi-serious comment from what you've just said there is that when Australians do this sort of level of innovation and change something as dramatic as this, it probably would be smart for us to have some equity in it. But it made our story easier to tell. We just said, hey, we're just worried about the wine, and that worked really well.
In 2004, Taylor's moved to seal all its wines under screw cap. It was the first major winery in Australia to do so.
I do remember telling to my father that we were doing it across our reds, our famous estate Cabernet Sauvignon and estate Shiraz, and he was quite concerned at the time. He said, gee, I hope you've got the support to do such a radical thing. But I just said, yeah, please trust us on this. And then I realised the consumers, because they weren't getting any sport wines, the consistency of our product, it really did work. So they embraced not only the innovation, but because there were no variability in our quality, it really helped improve our wine sales going forward.
Clare Valley were putting Riesling in, but very soon after, it was not just Riesling, it was everything. And I think that's another misunderstanding too, that some people thought, well, it kept, you know, Riesling nice and fresh. But in fact, it applies equally to all wines. It's just easier to see cork taint in a fresh aromatic like a Riesling. You know, in an oaked red, it can be a bit harder to see, but it's there to the same extent. So I think when people realise that that was the case, that it spread across all wine types and other regions and other winemakers pretty quickly took it up.
It was really exciting for our small little region in Australia to kick off such an exciting initiative that's made a real impact, not only on our own wines. That little idea really started to spread even to the UK supermarkets, and now we're just seeing it peeling out more and more as time goes on. And it just shows the general forefront of innovation and adaption to new ideas, new technologies that the Australian wine industry does so well, and it's reflected in its respect throughout the global wine community.
Taylor's Wine's third generation winemaker and managing director Mitchell Taylor speaking there. You can buy Taylor's St Andrews wines direct from the company's Clare Valley cellar door or online at taylorswines.com.au. Thanks so much to Taylor's for getting behind this episode. This is a story I really wanted to tell, but these documentaries are absolutely painstaking to produce, so it wouldn't have happened without Taylor's support.